Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubos Daf Kuf Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins roughly in the middle of Daf Kuf Aleph, Omen Aleph. If you like, you can count 21 lines from the top. In the middle of the line, Velo Blois. In our previous shiur, we saw a Mishnah at the lower part of Daf Kuf Omen Beis mentioning a number of different types of marriage, different types of women that are not entitled to the entitlements that are customary in a regular marriage. One of the points that was mentioned was that one of these women, whether it's the Ketana marriage or the Shnia, the one prohibited rabbinically because of an Arayas consideration, or Islandess, a woman who is discovered to be incapable of bearing children, if they brought into their marriage men's suits, and the value of the suits was recorded in the ksuba, and the man wears the suits, and they get worn out, upon the dissolution of these marriages, she does not take back with her the worn out suits. That's what Velo Blos is a reference to. Before we go further in the Gemara itself, we glance at the side. We have a Nosei Mivneh heading. Shortly, we're going to see a trapezoid or volcano shape, one of our series markings. And on the side of the Gemara, we feature this shape, and it indicates Shlavei Birur. As the Gemara goes on, you'll see there's stages in trying to explain Al Eza Isha Omar Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana will make a comment at the opening of our Gemara that said, where he says, Lo Shanu Ela Nichsei Malug Avol Nichsei Tzon Barzel Isla. The statement is a little vague until we can attach it to one of the cases in a specific case. But he says that this din, that there are no blows, that she doesn't take the worn out clothing with her, that's if you're dealing with nichsei malug. Nichsei malug are properties that a woman brings into the marriage to which the husband is entitled to benefit from their fruits. However, the value of nichsei malug is not recorded in the ksuba. So that if she brings suits in whose value is not recorded, in contrast to what we mentioned before, suits like that, so that's when she does not get the blos. But if it's nichsei tzon barzel, if it's suits whose value was recorded in the ksuba, and when you record the value of an item a woman brings into the marriage, that means that the husband accepts responsibility for compensating her if there's any loss in value, and if there's any gain, by the way, he can profit from that. So we'll see in the Gemara Rav Kahana making a distinction between nichsei malug suits, value of clothing who's not recorded in the ksuba, versus the nichsei tzon barzel. Now, I must make a point. This is regarding the end of our previous shiur. I know that this could be a little confusing because we just started a new topic, but just for the sake of accuracy, I try to avoid situations where I discover a mistake, or in this case, it's not a mistake, but we didn't explain something clearly enough in our previous shiur. In our previous shiur, we had seen Shitas Rav Yoshua, just a few lines above where we are now, who had mentioned that a Ketana marriage is viewed quite seriously. And amongst the different things that were mentioned is that if a minor was married rabbinically to a Kohen, the Kohen is allowed to defile himself in her burial. Now, when you have a bond that's only rabbinic in nature, how in the world could that enable a Kohen to defile himself, which is a Torah level prohibition? When on a Torah level, that's not his wife. They're not related at all. It's only a rabbinic bond. So Tosfos explains, and the third Tosfos from the top, Dibur HaMasel Baforas, without getting into details, but Tosfos explains that her status with regard to the husband is one of what's called a mace mitzvah. Without getting into details, all we can say for right now is that if the husband would not bury her, no one else will. And when you have a situation like that that's described as mace mitzvah, a Kohen is allowed to defile himself to see to the burial of the mace mitzvah. And that, by the way, is based on psukim that are darshaned in the Torah. To psukim in the Torah that are darshaned. So now we've fulfilled our requirement or obligation to be as clear as we can, and now we go back to our new topic. So now let's read the Gemara text. Omar le Rav Huna bar Chiya le Rav Kahana. Rav Huna says to Rav Kahana, Amris lon mishmei de Shmuel. You taught us in the name of Shmuel the following. Lo ishanu elo nichse maluk. The teaching of the Mishnah that says that she, the woman, does not get the worn out clothing, this is correct when you're dealing with nichse maluk. Those properties whose value, properties and items whose value is not recorded in the ksuba when they get married. When the value is not recorded, that's indicative of the idea, the fact that the husband, though the husband does receive benefit from those properties, called the peros, the benefits from those items. However, if there's any loss in value or any gain in value and the marriage comes apart, so he does not have to compensate or is not entitled to profit from it. The value was not recorded. In contrast to Nichse Tzon Barzil, whose value is recorded. So teaching says that the blois of Nichse Tzon Barzil, suits that were brought into the marriage whose value was recorded, so the worn out suits, Isla, she is entitled to take them with her. So this is the teaching that was said ultimately in the name of Shmuel, but that Rav Kahana had told Rav Huna. Avi bo Rav Papa, ahei. Rav Papa asks, regarding which woman was this distinction stated? And you see, we have the series marking we mentioned before. We're going through stages and trying to figure out what this teaching is referring to. So what do you see in the trapezoids? You see Mema'enes, Ilanis, and Shnia. So Ilema Ame'enes, if you were to think that this halacha is going on the Mema'enes, the girl who was married rabbinically and is entitled to walk out, Id Isnu, if the worn out clothing, if those suits are there, Edi v'edi shakla, whether it's nichse malug or nichse tzon barzil, she will take them. There's no knas. There's no reason to deprive her. A regular wife that is sent away from her marriage, she takes the blois. There's no reason here for her to lose out. V'edi lesnehu, and if they're not around, they're gone, they're lost. Edi v'edi lo shakla. So there's nothing for her to take. She doesn't get anything. Elo a'ilonis. Rav Kahana's teaching maybe was a distinction made within the case of an ilonis marriage. The Gemara says, no, that can't be. Id isnehu, if the blois are there, then idi v'idi shakla, whether it's nichse tzon barzel or nichse malug, she will take the blois. Id lesnehu, if they're not around. Ibcha miboyale, then the opposite should have been the case. Namely, nichse melug, debirushu sa kaimi isla. Nichse melug are items that are essentially hers. The husband doesn't take upon himself any responsibility with regard to the nichse melug. They are hers. And in fact, he shouldn't have even worn them. So that is what she should receive. Nichse tzon barzel, delav birshusa kaimi. If they were suits under the nichse tzon barzel category, then and those are not considered in her domain because he accepts upon himself responsibility to maintain their value. So less law. So the nichse tzon barzel are the ones, the blows she should not get. And that's exactly the opposite of what Rav Kahana had taught. There's a point in the Rashi regarding the nichse melug of the islandess. If the blows are around, so she should get isla, e svira loch, ila le glima, karna have. Assuming that the glima, the garment, is viewed as principal. The garment meaning the garment and the wearing of it is considered principal. So if it's considered principal, the husband is not entitled to the principal of nichse melug. He's entitled only to the fruits, but the suit. And the suit represents, the entirety of the suit represents principle. So he shouldn't have been using it. So therefore, if the blows around, she should be getting it. So it can't be that Rav Kahana's distinction between Nichse Melug and Nichse Sevaz was stated in the context of Aynas. Because if it was, then he would have taught the opposite. Ela, we continue. Ashnia. We're dealing with a prohibited marriage that was prohibited by the rabbis. The konsu rabbonan ledida b'dida, ledida b'dida. And the rabbis, they want to make a point. They impose a fine, and they make it like where it hurts, so to speak. What do we mean by that? The rabbonan imposed a knas ledida b'dida. If we take a look in the Tosus Rid at the bottom line, Elvel Ashnia v'Kansur Rabbanu L'Didei B'Dida U'Lidah B'Didei Pirush Nichse Tzon Barzel Shehein Birshus Shelbal. You can see we're continuing with the Tosus Rid on Amid Beis. The Nichse Tzon Barzel are considered in his domain. V'Heim Shelo, they're considered like his. So konsuhu kishela l'shalein la, that which you thought was yours, so you have to pay her with that. Afagav delesnehu, even if they're not around, even if they're worn out, you have to pay her. Uledida kedidei pirush nichse melug shebirushusa hein konsuha kishela. The afagav, the isnu, even if they're around, lo mishalem la. The nichse melug, she will not get. The choze hu lehefech, this is all the opposite of what should have been, kedei lekalkil nisuin, so as to mess up the marriage, create a confounding situation. We continue back in the Gemara, reading again, V'konsu rabbonan l'dida b'dida, u'l'dida b'dida. Omar Rav Simi bar Ashi shma mino mida Rav Kahana. We see from Rav Kahana, Ailo leglimo karna have v'lo michsi lo v'ozil adaboli. If we take a look in the Rashi, under the Gemara text, the fourth line under the Gemara text, Shma mino mid Rav Kahana diomar shnia Ein la blois dinichse malug. We saw that the shnia loses out. She doesn't get the worn out suits of nichse malug. And why does she not get them? V'taymo mishum de konsu rabbonin l'didah b'didah. That's because of what we said, that the rabbonin imposed this knas, this fine, that which should be hers, she loses out on. Ha ishok shera. However, if it was a kosher marriage, goyve oison mi menu v'afagav delo isnehu, she would collect the suits from him even if they're not around. What does that mean? So for our purposes, it meant that the suits of Nichsei Malug are principal, and the husband has no rights to benefit from the principal. So that's what the Gemara means, that you see from Rav Kahana's teaching that only in the case where there was a sinful marriage, the shnia marriage, she does not get the suits from the husband. But if a kosher marriage, then she's entitled to get the suits. And we say the suits, we mean the entire suit. The reason for that is that he shouldn't have been wearing it. The Gemara asks, "V'amar Rav Nachman pi Rahave?" But doesn't Rav Nachman say that the suits are the principle, but the wearing of the suits is considered the fruits, and a husband is entitled to the fruits? That is, the wearing of the suits is considered the fruits. So the Gemara says, "The Rav Nachman pliga." It's true. What Rav Nachman is teaching is at odds with what Rav Simi concluded from Rav Kahana. Now, we didn't explain just a technical point, but a woman who brings suits into the marriage as part of Nichsei Malug, so Rav Kahana had taught that it's considered principal and he shouldn't have worn them. So what does he do with them? So Rashi explains that those suits that she brought into the marriage as Nichsei Malug, which entitles the husband to the fruit, should have been sold, and the money received in the sale of those suits would be used to buy a piece of ground, a karka, and the ground would be cultivated and produce suits. That way you're preserving the principle while at the same time entitling the husband to that which he's entitled to the peros. Now, we continue in the Gemara. Ein lohen ksuba. Omar Shmuel. We saw in the Mishnah that the Memaenes and the Shnia and the Eilinis do not get a ksuba. Omar Shmuel. Lo shonu, the teaching of the Mishnah that they don't get a ksuba elamona masayim. That's only with regard to the basic required ksuba amount. Mona in the case of a widow marriage, mosayim in the case of a virgin marriage, aval tosefes yesh lohen. Tosefes is money or amounts of money that were written into the ksuba beyond the basic amount. Rashi says, matona ba'almo yoivla b'chibas biya. The tosefes, a husband gives out of his own goodwill in anticipation, or say in exchange for the idea that he is going to experience intimacy with her. And because of that chibas bia, this bond, closeness created through intimacy, this is what motivates the husband to provide the tosefes ksuba, the additional amount. That's viewed as a gift, and that she is entitled to. Tanya nami hochianet brisa that supports this. Noshim sha'amru chachomim. Ein lohen ksuba. Those women concerning whom we say they do not have a ksuba. We should point out ahead of time, this source is going to have another section to it. Section 2, you'll see in this source a slightly different expression with a totally different connotation. There's an expression, Yotzos Shelo Beksuba, are to leave without receiving a ksuba. So there's a difference you'll see later between these two expressions, Yotzos Shelo Beksuba versus Ein Lehen Ksuba. In the meantime, women concerning whom it's been said, Ein Lehen Ksuba Kagoin, Hamimaenes Vechavroseha, we saw the Mimaenes and her colleagues. What do we mean? The Shnia, the Islandess. Ein Lehen Mona Mosayim Avol Tosefes Yesh Lohen. They don't get the basic Ksuba, but the Tosefes, which is a gift to them, they receive. Noshim Shamru Chachomim Yotze Shelo Beksuba. However, women concerning whom it's been legislated that they shall leave without receiving Ksuba. Kegoin Oiveres Aldas V'Chavroseha. We saw earlier in this Masechta, women, for example, who violate Torah law, or they violate accepted rabbinic practice. They are to be divorced, and they are not to receive a ksuba. Ein lohen toisefes v'kol shekein mona masayim. They're not entitled to the extra, and all the more so, they're not entitled to the basic ksuba. V'hayotzes mishum shemra, a woman who leaves the marriage because of a bad reputation, that she behaved immorally with other men. She will take the nichsei malug that she brought into the marriage and leaves with that. Rashi points out, three lines from the bottom, Noshim shamru bohen chachomim, loshun ein lohen ksuba, that expression, yesh lohen tosefes. Noshim shamru chachomim, loshon yoitzis below ksuba, that expression meant kol toiras gibu hifkiu mehen. All possible collection has been removed from them. They cannot collect anything, not even the Tosefis. The last point of this source indicated that a woman who is dismissed from the marriage because of the bad reputation, she takes with her the Nichsei Malug, Misaya Lei Rav Huna, Yomar Rav Huna. This supports Rav Huna that says, Zinsa Lo Hifsida. The Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis, Blosel Kayomen. The woman who was a suspect of behaving immorally, so she is divorced and takes with her those worn out things that are still around. Tani Tano Kameid Rav Nachman. A Tanakh source was stated in the presence of Rav Nachman, Zinsa Hifsida Blosel Kayomin. Now, the text of this source is exactly the opposite of that which we heard in the name of Rav Huna. So, Rav Nachman hears this source and he questions its reliability. He says, Im hi Zinsa Keileo Mizanoi, if she behaved immorally, did her vessels behave immorally? To me, rather, you should say, Lo Hifsida Bloseo Kayomen. She doesn't lose those items that she had brought into the marriage that are worn out, she takes back with her. So Rav Nachman represents approach number one, namely that the source that was taught in his presence was inaccurate. There's a second approach. Omar Rabo Bar Barchanom Rabbi Yochanan. Zu Divrei Rabbi Menachem Stimta. You don't have to change the Girsa, but rather the source that you taught was in accordance with Rabbi Menachem, who we find is the author of numerous Tanakh sources that are nameless. That's what Stimta means, from the word Stam, no name. But nevertheless, that's his opinion. Avo chachomim omrim zinsa loy hifsida blosel kayomen. What the chachomim, what Rav Huna taught, that is in accordance with the chachomim. So very simply, you have Rabbi Nachum Simtov says Insef Sida Basar Kamen, and you have the Chachomim Shita, based on whom Rav Huna said his din Lo Hivsida Basar Kayomin. The Mishnah on Kuf Amud Bey said regarding the Eilinus in Mitchila Nasa, if he married her initially knowing she was an Eilinus, then as the Mishnah said, Mitchila Nasa L'Shem Eilinus, so Yesh La Ksuba. She gets the Ksuba. Omar Rav Huna, actually, we should take a look at the side of the Gemara. We have a Nosei Mivne heading. A triangle appears. And you see here a Machlokes Rav Huna Rav Yehuda B'Kain Gadol Shehichnis Almona V'lohikirba She Almona Haim Yesh Lok Suba. Kain Gadol marries a woman and later discovers that she is an Almona. In other words, he didn't know that ahead of time. Does she get a Ksuba? The double underline will be used to highlight the expression stama. Stama, for our purposes, means he didn't know. He took in a woman. If he knew she was an almona, so it was a forbidden marriage. So we saw already in the mission of the on Daf Kuf Amid Beis the laws that apply to her. Namely, the almona l'kain gadol, she gets a ksuba. What about a case... And we should also point out we explained at the time that it's a type of knas that we impose on the Kohen Gadol that she should get the ksuba because he is the one that tried to entice her into the marriage. She has a lot to lose, so you can assume that she wasn't the one that was trying to get him to marry her. And that, of course, we said in opposition to the case of the Nesua, of the of that is the Shnia. What happens though in a case where he didn't know she was an almona? The Gemara, Omar Rav Huna, Eilinus. Isha v'yeno isha. Almona, isha gemura. Now we explain that. Eilinus isha v'yeno isha. What do we mean by that? She's a wife, she's not a wife. Hikirba, yesh lo ksuba. If he knew ahead of time that she was an eilinus, so she's like an ish, like a regular wife, she's entitled to a ksuba. Lo hikirba, ain lo ksuba. If he didn't know ahead of time that she was an eilinus, it's a mekach tois. And therefore, it was a mistaken marriage to begin with, and therefore, no ksuba. Almona, isha, gemura. Bein hikirba, bein lo hikirba, yesh lo ksuba. Under all circumstances, even if he didn't know that the Kohen Gadol did not know that she was an almona, she gets a ksuba. For Rav Yehuda Omer, achazu v'achazu, whether it's an eilinus or an almona, Isha v'eino isha, namely hikir ba yesh lo ksuba, lo hikir ba ein lo ksuba. If he didn't know that she was an almona, she loses the ksuba. She doesn't get a ksuba. So we contrast just to zero in on the main point. The machlokes Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda is with regard to an almona that he married, not realizing that she was an almona. Does she get a ksuba or not? According to Rav Huna, she gets a ksuba. According to Rav Huna, no. Meisvei, here we have a kashi, you'll see, is directed against Rav Huna. Konsa bechezkas shikain. A woman was married knowing that she was that she was an almona. The nim says she came, it turns out she is an almona. Yesh lo ksuba. We can infer, ha stama, ein lo ksuba. If, however, it was a marriage where he didn't know, and it turned out that she was an almona, she does not get a ksuba. That's not like Rav Huna. So the Gemara answers, Lo Tema. Don't make the inference as you just did. So don't say, Ha Stama Ein Lo Ksuva, Elo Ema, but rather, Medayik, infer as follows. Now, our goal is to find out a case. What's the case where she does not get Iksuba? This is the case. Konsa Bechezgas She'eno Kane. He married her with the understanding that she had not been married to anybody ever. V'nimseis Shehi Kane. And it turns out she had been married. Ein Lo Ksuba. So this is the case where she tricked him. She loses the Ksuba. Aval Stama, where he took her in simply not aware of her having been an Amona. My. Now this case of Stama is what we call Lo Hikirba. What will the din be? Isla. So then we would infer she gets. Now this in effect is the beginning of a question though. Before we get to this, as far as the defense that was offered for Rav Huna was that when you want to make an inference, you focus on what was taught and what you infer. What was taught was a cheska shikain, in other words, we'll say knowledge that she was an almona, and the inference case is knowledge, his knowing, or which was with the clear assumption that she had not been married to anybody. So when you have an initial state of, say, definitive knowledge, and then you find out either it's like that, then we say she gets the ksuba. And if it turns out that he was mistaken, then she does not get the ksuba. But in a case where there was unawareness, we call stama. He just made his own assumption. Then, what Rav Huna said can be preserved in the meantime. But now we ask. So far, in order for us to say that she loses the ksuba, that's where he was tricked. Aval stama, the last point, which is really the beginning of a long question, aval stama, where he didn't know that she had been an almona, my, then what are we saying? Is law that she gets a ksuba like Rav Huna. Aditani becheskas she came, v'nimsa she came, yesh lo ksuba. Instead of telling me almost the obvious, where he knew what she was, and it turns out she is that she gets the ksuba, l'shaminon stamo yesh lo ksuba. You should have taught me the case where he made an assumption that she was not married. In other words, stama, he didn't know, he simply didn't know that she was an almona. And it turns out that she is an almona, that she gets the ksuba. V'kol shekein ha. And all the more so in the case where everything checked out as he originally thought it actually turned out to be. V'yoid tani, and furthermore, there's a Tanaic source that says, Konsa biyodua v'nimtseis biyodu yesh lo ksuba. When he marries her, knowing she's an almona, and it turns out she's an almona, then she gets a ksuba. Konsa stam ein lo ksuba. If he took her in without positive knowledge that she's an almona, then she does not get a ksuba. Tiufta de Rav Huna. This would seem to refute then Rav Huna. Because Rav Huna said in the Konsa Stam case, and you can use the markings to see very quickly, you see the double underline Stam here, and it said Ein, we scroll in Ein to emphasize she does not get. Go back to Rav Huna, And you see the question that was raised on Rav Huna, where we were inferred Stamo Ein Law, and here we, in effect, bring proof that the question we asked on him was a solid question. So the Gemara responds we'll say, explain what led Rav Huna to say what he did. Even though, technically speaking, it seems that this Tanaic source refutes Rav Huna. Rav Huna masnisin at isei. Rav Huna was confused, was mistaken by the Mishnah. Hu savar midikomaflig ba'ailinis velo komaflig ba'almona. We have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the text. If you go back to Kuf Amid Beis, as the note indicates, you see the corresponding arrow on, again, Kuf Amid Beis. The Mishnah spoke about a islandess, where he did not know she was an islandess, and where he did know she was an islandess. And we saw a distinction. If he did not know she was an islandess, so then no ksuba. If he knew ahead of time she was an islandess, she gets a ksuba. So Rav Huna figured like this. He figured from the fact that the Mishnah made the komaflik b'islandess, from the fact the Mishnah made a distinction within islandess, v'lo komaflik b'almona, and no distinction was made with regard to almona. Almona was taught in the Mishnah as well. And there, if the Mishnah said, as a blanket rule, said the almona gets a ksuba. So, as far as Rav Huna is concerned, the almona, whether he knew she was an almona or he didn't know she's an almona, she gets a ksuba. As we said, there was no distinction made within almona. So, he figured, Michlal, let me read that again. Since the distinction was made within Eilinus and no distinction made within Almona, so one could infer that in the case of Almona, even in a Stam case, she will get the Ksuba, velo he, and that isn't so. Because Kikotani law, la Almona, when the Mishnah presented the case of the Almona, and the Mishnah said she gets a ksuba, a plukta de ailinis koi. Plukta means, in this case, distinction. It's coming on the heels of the distinction that was made by ailinis. So just like in the case of ailinis, a distinction is made, so too in the case of almona, the same distinction must be made. Namely, that in the case of the ailinis, we indicated she gets a ksuba, that's where he knew ahead of time she was an islandess. Likewise, with regard to the almona, we said that she gets a ksuba, that's where he knew ahead of time she was an almona, and he married her with that in mind. Then she gets a ksuba. However, if he wasn't aware in a positive sense, in a knowing sense that she was an almona, and it then turned out she was an almona, that we called lo hikirba, she would not get a ksuba. Now, as you can see, we've come to the end of the 11th perek of ksubas and Amir Tzashem. We now begin b'siyata d'shmaya, the 12th perek, hanoisis isha of maseches ksubas. Before we begin the Mishnah, we glance at the side with a topic heading, the nosei, the hanosei isha v'lo bas shoelo miisha achir. Man marries a woman that happened to have a daughter from a previous marriage. Uposak imo lozun esbita chomeshanim, and the second husband agreed to support the woman's daughter for 5 years. The Mishnah. Hanoisis isho posakimo kidei shiozun esbito chomeshanim chayev lozuno chomeshanim. If he made this agreement at the beginning of their marriage to support his daughter, her daughter from a previous marriage, so he is obligated to do so. Niseis liacher uposka imoi kidei shiozun es bitochom eshanim. If that mother then married another man, if we keep track of the marriages, this would seem to be then her third marriage. It's the marriage with a man that agrees to support her daughter for 5 years. Chayov lozuno chameshanim. So the second husband is also obligated to support the girl for 5 years. The brackets that we see here are not really for skipping purposes, but it brings us to a third situation of the regarding that girl. So far, she's received committed support of two men, two husbands of her mother. Now, the girl herself, in stage three, it says in the Mishnah after the brackets, Niseis habal noisin l'mazonas vein noisin lo demei mazonas. The husband is obligated to provide his wife with support, so he does so. What about the fact that she's getting support from two other men? Well, those two other men will put aside the cash value of her mazonas, and that's what she receives. Let's go now over the brackets. We mentioned that the girl's mother marries a second man that's willing to support the daughter for 5 years. First man agrees to support her for 5 years. Second man agrees to support her for 5 years. In the brackets, we read as follows. Lo yomar harishon l'chishetovo etzli azuna. The first man cannot say, yeah, I'll support her when she comes to me. That he can't get away with that. That I'll only support her when she comes to me. Now here we'll just translate literally. It means the food must be delivered to where her mother is. Where her mother is, you can assume that's where the girl will be. And likewise, these two subsequent husbands should not, or if you call them, you can call them stepfathers. These two men shall not be allowed to say, "Hare onu zonin oiso kechad." Between the two of us, we'll support her with one food allotment. Elo echad zona v'echad noisei lo demei mazonos. These two men, each one had accepted a mazonos obligation. How much can a person eat? A person eats one defined portion, not two portions. So, between these two men, one will provide the actual food, and the other one will provide the value of the food in cash terms. Niseis, when that girl gets married to her husband, habal noisin lo mazonos, the husband will support her with the actual food, v'hein noisin lo demei mazonos, and they will support her with the value of the food. Mesu, the stepfathers that we've spoken about, let us say they died, and they had their own families. Because those two stepfathers, what happened was, as we saw before, they had married the woman that had a daughter from a previous marriage. But they, those two subsequent marriages, had their own children. And amongst their own children were their own daughters. Benosehen nizaynus minachosim b'nechorin. Their own daughters will receive properties from their respective father's estate, but not from properties that their fathers may have sold to others. The he nizaynus minachosim eshubadim, And that girl that had been brought in by her mother to those subsequent marriages, that girl is supported even from Nechosim Mishubodim. Mipnei Shehi Kibalas Chov. You see, that girl received a type of shtar, a shtar mizonas, we can call it, a document, a contract entitling her to receive mizonas. This was a contract that the stepfather had issued to the mother on behalf of that girl. So the girl is coming with a shtar, and that empowers her to collect even from properties that these men, the stepfathers, had sold after their marriage to that girl's mother. So that she has a very strong, she has great strength in her ability to collect her mizonos debt, much more so than these men's actual daughters. Hapikhin hoyu kaisvin almenas, pikhin means wise or sharp-minded men who are marrying a woman with a daughter from a previous marriage, and they're willing to support the daughter. However, if they're on the ball, they would write in the contract, almenas she'azun es bitecha meishanim kozman she'at imi. I am willing to support your daughter for 5 years as long as you are with me. But if I die, or you die, or I divorce you, then I no longer have any obligation, or my estate has no longer any obligation to support your daughter. So that way we would avoid all the issues mentioned earlier. Before we go into the Gemara itself, we glance at the side with a Nosei topic heading, where we indicate a machlokes Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish, a controversy between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish be'echot shemosar shtar b'fnei edim, where a person presented a document, something written out, shikosuv bo, and what's written in this document is the following. Ani chayav l'cha mona. I am obligated to pay you $100. V'ein bo chasimas yad. And this document doesn't have an actual signature in it. It might have the name of the person written in there, but it's not without his signature. Does a piece of paper like that obligate the person whose name is mentioned therein to pay that? You'll see that we have diamonds that appear in the Gemara, and those are Shlavei Birur Heichidomi. We're going to be looking into what are the circumstances of this machlokis. Now, what we've done is we may have over-explained because we gave away the end of the story before actually seeing it in the Gemara. So now the Gemara. Itmar ha'oimer l'chavero, chayav ani l'cha mona. Literally means one says to his friend, I am obligated to you to pay $100. Rabbi Yochanan amar chayav, Rabbi Yochanan amar poter. Rabbi Yochanan says that obligates him, and Reish Lakish says he's exempt. Hey, chidomi, what are really the circumstances? If the speaker appointed two witnesses, and he says, you be my witnesses, that I owe this guy over here $100. My time of the Reish Lakish to Kapotar. Why does Reish Lakish exempt the person? That's a very formal method of obligating yourself. If the speaker didn't appoint formal witnesses, why would Rabbi Yochanan obligate a person Rashi says that if a person is really interested in obligating himself, he has to appoint formal witnesses. Without that, he doesn't obligate himself, even if he says what he said. The Gemara answers, the Olam delo komar lohu atem edai. The case is where he didn't formally appoint witnesses. The Hochabe Mayaskinon, the Omale Chayov ani lucha mona bishtar. Bishtar means in a, he wrote out. He wrote out this expression, I am obligated to pay you $100. Now, this document was handed over in front of two people. Two people saw it. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayav Alimo Milsa Deshtora. Alimo means there is strength. There is strength to words written into a document, which was given over in the presence of witnesses. Command Yomalu Atem Edim Domi. It says if he appointed them as formal witnesses. In the absence of a written document, a person can obligate himself if he states formally, you are my witnesses. If you write out this expression that I am chayav to you, and you hand over that information in writing in the presence of witnesses, that also obligates a person. Reish Lakish Amar Potter Lo Alimo Milsa Deshtar. Reish Lakish says he's exempt. This does not have that strength. It doesn't have the strength to obligate him. On the in the Rashi, which we'll learn together, we'll see some more detail. Rashi Hochi Garsinan Li Oilom. We do have a star in the Rashi to help you find it a little faster. Li Oilom De Lo Omar Lohu Atemedai Rocha Bemayaskinon Bishtar Shemoser Lo Shtar Befonenu. You have witnesses saying that we saw Mr. A give this piece of paper to Mr. B. The Kosov Bo, and it says, Ani Chayev Lechomona. V'afopi Shiksav Yodohu, even though he wrote it out, it's handwritten in his handwriting, Chayel V'lo Chosam, since he didn't sign it, Potter. He is exempt. That, of course, is according to Reish Lakish. V'ha disnan hotzilav ksav yado shu chayav lo goyvin chosam nechorin. What would Reish Lakish do with that which the Mishnah taught much earlier in the Masechta, that if a person produces a document that the writer obligated himself to pay, so the receiver can collect from properties that he's holding on to? Yeah, that's different. Kigon shechosambo, he signed it. Ani ploni lovisi mona leploni. Here he did a formal signing of his name. Kimucho perakisha samala domabaye. And there in perakisha samala, Abaye says, lichto chsimus yodei achaspa, aval magil telo, maitaimo, dilma mishkach le vechule, tanan hotzilov ksav yodo. Alma, what we see from these Gemaras, without getting into the details of them, what we see from them is Bechasimas Yodei Komairi. Those are talking about cases where he signed his name. Avalacha Hachi Kosavle. But here, this is what was written. Chayav Ani Lecha Mona Velo Chosambo. He didn't sign it. I would imagine, but I'm not committing myself, that when he says Chayav Ani, he might very well have written his name. He printed his name out, but it's not the way he signs it. And that's what V'lo Chosambo means. Alternatively, since it was given over in front of witnesses, it could be that even without any name in it, just by saying Chayav Ani L'chomona, but the witnesses can identify who gave it to whom, that itself would obligate him. So in the meantime, we have a machlokes, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, concerning a writing of Chayav Ani L'chomona without a formal signature in there, but it was given over in front of witnesses. Is that sufficient to obligate him to pay that? Mirz Hashem, in our next shiur, will be picking up with this machlokes. You'll notice we have a geometric form, a trapezoid, and this will be presented as a give and take style gemara, because this we will see this trapezoid shape flipping back and forth. The narrow part facing up will represent a kasha on Reish Lakish, where it seems that he does become obligated, and the inverted shape indicates a response. And if we follow this gemara, you'll see that these shapes keep flipping back and forth. There's quite a rigorous discussion on this matter. And with this, we'll be able to figure out, by the end of the sugya, are we going to be left with a kashan Reish Lakish, or will he effectively be able to answer it, or will we have a response for it? In the meantime, though, before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.